It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Well, babies grow up, and some of those babies like to play football. And with the football season kicking off this weekend in our colleges, in our high schools, in our middle schools, we want to get an update on the flurry of concussion research. The news we've been hearing in recent years, also that ongoing concussion debate going on in sports. Here to help us do that is Dr. Andy Peterson, Assistant Clinical Professor of Pediatrics and Sports Medicine at the University of Iowa Children's Hospital. Dr. Peterson, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
We've talked with you before, but tell us now, with all the research going on all the time, what's the latest in terms of concussions?
Yeah, it's funny. There's not much that's changed in the last year. We're kind of at a stage where the low-hanging fruit has been gathered, and there's bigger questions to answer, but no big changes over the last year.
You know, what are the fundamentals? The low-hanging fruit you just mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. So the most recent concussion guidelines were published in 2012, and were fully implemented by last year, and they got rid of some of the things that were being done before. So no one's allowed to return to sport on the same day as the injury. We're doing a better job of making sure that people are fully recovered before they're allowed to return back to play. We're using a graduated return to play to make sure that they tolerate some lower level stresses before they see the stresses of contact and collision sports. So those things have kind of all been done at this point. And we're learning more and more about the epidemiology of the injury. So the big epidemiology studies at the high school and college level are kind of concluding at this point. And so we have a better idea of what the incidence of these injuries are. And we're getting more data out of our NFL football players to know what some of the long-term effects are. So we're to this crossroads, kind of. We know what happens. We know kind of the long-term effects of some of these injuries. And we know some of the things that can be done to prevent them.
Mm-hmm. So give us an idea, because we thought for many years, just build them better helmets and that'll take care of the problem. What's happening in the skull that a better helmet doesn't necessarily help as much as we would like?
Right. So that's a good example. We know that better equipment doesn't really make much of a difference. In fact, there was a very elegant study published by one of my colleagues at the University of Wisconsin last year that demonstrated that the type of helmet, the age of the helmet, whether or not that helmet had been reconditioned, the type of mouth guard someone wore, none of those things made any difference in people's concussion risk. And that's because the injury itself isn't due to the direct linear forces to the head. It's not that direct impact that's really the problem. It's more these transmitted shear forces through the brain that cause those injuries. And there's no real way to make those forces go away. You'd have to have something that absorbs the impact, something that really takes the energy away. But this just redistributes it. And the current helmets we have kind of redistribute or change how the energy is transmitted, but doesn't really absorb the energy or make it go away.
And in doing this, most of us have not come into contact with a human brain, but we have to picture it as a mass of, like, custard-like mass that's floating in a fluid?
Yeah, exactly. So there's it's buoyant, it's floating in there, and it bounces around, and it's not firmly affixed to the skull, and you can't really do anything to protect the skull enough to protect the brain from those types of shear and transmitted forces.
Mm-hmm. So when it gets bounced around, when we have head trauma or a concussion, what is that bouncing around damaging? What is it doing?
Yeah, it's injuring the actual neurons, so the brain cells themselves. We see some tearing forces through the neurons, which makes the cell membranes themselves leaky, which causes some other problems. It causes excitatory neurotransmitters to leak out and causes kind of global dysfunction. It also causes an energetics problem because the cell has to work a lot harder to maintain its normal cell membrane gradient. And so the energy that would normally be used for normal cellular functions and for protective mechanisms is being used to just do the basics, to maintain that ion gradient across the cell membrane.
Mm-hmm. So remind us about the news that we've been hearing, professional football players in the NFL who've had concussions over a period of years, sometimes decades. The problems they run into later in life are what, and how are they tied to the concussions?
Yeah, we know that our NFL football players, our former NFL football players, have about a 3-fold increased risk of depression, and they have about a 16-fold increased risk of dementia. And we think that at least some of this is due to a problem called chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or tau encephalopathy, as it's commonly called in the medical literature, is a problem where multiple injuries to the brain over time causes this this kind of tau scarring, where they get some scarring around certain areas in the brain, and that causes some other global dysfunction as well. The big work on that is being done in Boston with Anne McKee's group, and she's done autopsy studies on over 100 brains of former NFL football players and found evidence of chronic traumatic encephalopathy in many of them.
Mm-hmm. So changes in the NFL because of these findings?
Yeah, you know, the biggest change has been the kickoff rule change. So in 2011, they moved the yard line from which the kickoff is done forward, and that has reduced the number of kickoff returns in the NFL. And there's been a subsequent decrease in the number of concussions during the kickoff. And the kickoff return was the most dangerous part of the game at the NFL level. There are more concussions there than in any other part of the game. And that's been wildly successful. It's decreased the number of concussions on the kickoff about by half.
How is that translating into our middle schools and high schools?
Well, it's a little bit different there, right? An NFL kicker can pretty routinely put the ball through the back of the end zone. You know, the quality of the kicker is a little bit different at the high school and middle school level. But there have been leagues that have gotten rid of the kickoff. That's been done in some youth sports leagues to try to decrease the injuries in those settings.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the question here is, before we get to that, I'm looking at, recent news, the governor of California, Jerry Brown, recently signing into law a new law that regulates football team practices at middle and high schools. Included in this law, I think it doesn't take place until go into effect until January 1st, bans against full contact practices that last longer than 90 minutes on a single day and contact practices during the off season. All this designed to reduce concussions and other serious brain injuries. Is that something that potentially could come Iowa's way?
Yeah, it sure could. At this point, the only things that we've shown to reduce the risk of concussion is to reduce the exposure to contact. So we know the fewer opportunities there are to hit your head, the less likely you are to get concussed. The Ivy League has already done this, so the Ivy League limits their contact and collision practices to 2 a week, and that might end up happening at the NCAA level as well.
You know, parents out there of kids who love football, what a great sport it is, of course, but parents out there, myself included, are torn between saying, no, I don't want you to do this, and go off and do what previous generations have done. Have fun, play football. How do you make that decision?
Yeah, I'm not torn at all. I think the benefits of playing sports clearly outweigh the risks. You know, we're still talking about fairly rare events. Even in football, which is our most dangerous sport, we're talking about 0.6 concussions for every 1,000 exposures. And the vast majority of those heal very quickly without any long-term sequelae. The people that you're hearing about primarily in the news are people that have had a huge exposure. These are people that either were treated wrong when they had a concussion, they got very, very unlucky for whatever reason, or they've had repetitive injuries over the course of many, many years. And frankly, that's just not very many people. The benefits of playing sports are clearly there. You know, we know that people maintain their physical activity levels from childhood into adulthood. And I frankly think that the risk of sitting on the couch and eating chips is higher than the risk of playing football.
There are other sports besides football that have concussion risks, right?
Yeah, but football is really the king. You know, the next closest is soccer, and that has about half of the risk of what football does.
Mm-hmm. How much of this challenge is getting past that macho attitude that we connect with football, summed up by saying, well, getting your bell rung, that's part of the game. Just get in there, be tough, and get back in there.
You know, it's funny. When I first started getting into doing concussion work, I was afraid that was something I was going to bump up against, partly because I had been exposed to that myself as an athlete. But I think people are seeing that their concussed athletes don't perform very well. It's in nobody's best interest for that kid to be out there playing with a concussion. Not only is he at risk for having worse injuries and for having a worse injury than he would have otherwise had, but he just doesn't play well. Those people don't really contribute to the game. They don't really contribute to the team. You don't play well when you're concussed. So I think coaches are more than happy to get their concussed athletes off the field because it probably leaves them with a better team than if they leave them in.
Okay, we have about a minute left. What is your best guess, Dr. Andy Peterson, about how football will look in 10, 20 years? It'll still be around is what I'm getting the sense of.
Yeah, you know, I think it probably will be for a couple of reasons. It's a popular sport. People just like football in general, and the money is very, very big, which is obviously a strong driver. However, there's some evidence that it's starting to fade at the lower levels. So youth football is down about 9.6% in participation since 2010. High school football is down about 2-3%.
Has that ever happened?
No, it's always grown. This is the first time it's shrunk.
Okay, and we can tie it to this news of the concussions.
Well, maybe. I mean, there's other things that could contribute as well. So sports specialization is going up, so people specialize in individual sports earlier.
Okay.
Soccer participation is going up, so it might be sucking some football players away.
We have to go. Andy Peterson, Dr. Andy Peterson, thank you for the update.
You bet. Take care.
Assistant Clinical Professor of Pediatrics and Sports Medicine at the University of Iowa Children's Hospital, Dr. Andy Peterson.